This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you and to everyone else throughout America this morning who are joining us here on WGN Radio, or maybe people in other countries, because with today's technology, we can go all over the world. But we'll be here until 6 o'clock, as I mentioned, visiting with Matt just a few minutes ago. Max Armstrong will be with us to talk about, I guess it would be the revival of a tractor ride in northern Illinois. And then he'll, a little bit later, visit with Greg Groh, who is a market analyst with Archer Financial Services. But before all of that, we're going to talk about a special event at the State Fairgrounds in Springfield tomorrow. And it's the Illinois Fairgrounds Foundation fundraiser to do some work to rehabilitate some of the old structures on the state fairgrounds. So we do have a lot coming up, and we're going to talk state fair right after these messages here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, good morning again. Having been in this business now of broadcasting since 1952, I marvel at the advances in technology that we have put together for radio and for television, because this morning I'm sitting in my office in Scottsdale, Arizona, and John Slayton is somewhere in Naples, Florida, and thanks to Bob Ferguson, our engineer at the WGN studios in Chicago, we're able to all come together and share with you some information. So, John, good morning, and I hope things are well in Florida.
Good morning, Orion. Everything's fine here, except it's dark out.
Well, yeah, this time of the year, it still is a little dark. But I appreciate your coming on the air this morning to talk about an event tomorrow at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield, because the press release that arrived a few days ago says the not-for-profit foundation established to help facilitate the rehabilitation of aging structures at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield and DuCoin will kick off its public fundraising drive at a family-friendly event on Sunday, June 4th at the fairgrounds in Springfield. First of all, talk to me about the foundation itself and your role in it and what's hopefully going to be done.
Well, the foundation was set up last August. I think they announced it on Ag Day at the 2017 Illinois State Fair. And you were on stage when that announcement was made. And it was long overdue. It was probably something that should have been accomplished 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, as other states that surround Illinois have gotten a huge head start on us, and they're asking Illinois corporations that are headquartered in Illinois to donate to their cause. So we're a little bit behind the eight ball getting a late start, but we're going to give it a go, Orion, and you're very familiar with the condition of the structures and the buildings on the Illinois State Fairgrounds, I'm sure.
Well, many of those buildings stand idle for the year except for the 10-day Illinois State Fair, and so it's easy, I think, for buildings to fall into disrepair, and we've certainly seen that happening. But the fairgrounds have such a history. I think I've attended now 52 Illinois State Fairs since I arrived at WGN, and always enjoy the fairs. I remember the days when, as I mentioned to Matt earlier this morning, I remember the days when we would run a special train from Chicago to Springfield to bring people to the Illinois State Fair. Do we have an agenda on what buildings we're going to work on first?
Well, there are two that are in imminent need of repairs, one of which has been in the news quite a bit since it had some structural issues last October, and that's the Coliseum, which is a building that was built in 1901. And the engineering firm that walked through and reviewed and provided the study estimated the repair cost at about $4 million. So until that is accomplished, that building will sit idle, and it's not safe for fairgoers to utilize that structure, which is sad. Another issue that just came up in the last 2 weeks, I think, due to some adverse Illinois weather, was that the outdoor arena, for about the third or fourth time, has had the awning tear on it. And again, fair officials and structural engineers have declared that building unsuitable for non-fair or state fair events. So they're going to have to make some quick fixes on that. And it would have been easier if the state of Illinois would have come up with a budget. But as you and I both know, that hasn't happened yet.
Certainly hasn't. So once again, people like you and people that you put on the board of directors of the foundation are coming together. And tomorrow, what's going to happen at the fairgrounds in Springfield? And tell me about the significance of Route 66.
Well, Route 66 runs through Springfield to Chicago, and the fairground sits right on Route 66. And tomorrow is 66 days before the Illinois State Fair ribbon cutting ceremony. So I guess they're tying that theme in together, and there will be an event on the fairgrounds tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. at a cost of $50 a person or $100 a family, with food, beverages, historical tours provided for the fairgrounds. And it will most likely be a small event, but at least we're off and running. Earlier this year, we made application for the 501c3 status for the nonprofit corporation so that people can give money to the cause in a tax-deductible fashion. And as recently as 6 or 7 weeks ago, the website for the foundation went online, so there is a method to make a donation online. If someone would visit www.ilfairfoundation.com, and we're hoping that will pick up a little bit on the fundraising side as well. But we are also in conversation with some major Illinois corporations about naming rights on buildings on the fairgrounds, and there are three of those conversations going on right now.
Well, certainly other states. Go ahead.
There is a building on the fairgrounds called the Orion J. Samuelson Jr. Livestock Building, and we've not been getting naming right income for that building for some time.
I get the hint, John. I get the hint. However, I did volunteer when Governor Edgar said he was going to name the building after me, which really was quite a surprise. I did promise I would come in at the end of every state fair and clean the barns.
The naming rights on that building it was an very nice honor for a very nice man, Orion.
Well, thank you very much. So, again, the website is illfairfoundation.com. That's I-L-F-A-I-R foundation.com. Now, you've talked about companies and naming rights, but I can send you a check and you can don't have to name anything, because individuals, families, fairgoers can do the same.
Absolutely. I mean, the small donations are as important to this cause as some larger corporate donations. There are about 350 acres in the fairgrounds in Springfield, and it consists of about 170-some buildings across the fairgrounds dating back to 1894. The foundation also covers the DuCoin State Fair in southern Illinois, and it consists of about 1,200 acres and 30 to 35 buildings, and a lot of those are in need of repair as well.
And they are historical buildings, too, with a long history. And the one final thing I want to mention about the Illinois State Fairgrounds that really, well, it does involve a structure, and that's the racetrack, because the Illinois State Fair has one of the best racetracks in the country, does it not, for harness racing?
It does. It has held some national records, and I don't know if those still stand or not, but it is a wonderful feature located on the Illinois State Fairgrounds. It's sad to see what the horse racing industry has become in Illinois because of some of the payouts for winning races, et cetera, but there are groups that are still trying to get that fixed, and as recently as a month or two ago, there was a group trying to get a casino on the Illinois State Fairgrounds.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think that has gone very far legislatively.
Right. You're right. The horse racing industry in Illinois is really challenged, and that's a subject for another day here on the Saturday Morning Show, and we're going to talk about that. Well, John, you traveled safely from Florida back to Springfield for tomorrow's event, and we look forward to seeing you well before the fair, but we'll certainly see you at the Illinois State Fair. Thank you for joining me early in the morning here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Thank you very much, Orion. Best wishes.
Thank you, John Slayton, who is chairman of the Illinois Fairgrounds Foundation, and quite a lineup of people on that foundation board working hard to rehabilitate the state fairgrounds there. Max Armstrong, if there is a tractor ride anywhere in the world, you know who'll be there. Max, and he'll talk about an upcoming tractor ride when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. And we're coming up to 24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning. As I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, if there is a tractor ride anywhere in the world, you can bet that Max Armstrong will be somewhere near. So let's say good morning to the tractor guy, Max.
Orion, we are reviving the Northern Illinois tractor ride. Yes, indeed, coming up in the week ahead and next weekend specifically, folks will have an opportunity to see more than 90 farm tractors, antique farm tractors. We started this with a Heritage Tractor Adventure, and we did that ride more than a dozen years. And Mary Beth DeGruge, who pulled that ride together and all of the complex elements, has done it again. Working with Don Phillips, who joins me on the line to talk a bit about this. Don, we're going to be centered right in that Grundy County area for the most part, and maybe spilling a little bit into LaSalle County, I understand.
We will, Max. We're actually going to be at Bill Burnham's farm, which is right next door to Nettle Creek School. So if folks know where Nettle Creek School is, they can find the Burnham farm, and that's where the tractors will be spending each evening.
That's just outside of Morris, if I recall correctly.
Yep, we're about probably 6-7 miles northwest of Morris.
When will be the best time to see the tractors? I know we're going to be in Morris, and we're going to be in a park there on Friday afternoon, June 9th, Friday afternoon. That might be a good time.
Friday afternoon will be a great time. We're going to parade up Liberty Street, which we haven't done for a very long time. I think maybe the second or third year was the last time we did that. And then we're going to park at Chapin Park, which is just a couple of blocks to the west of Liberty Street, near the north side of downtown there. The Corn Festival Tractor Show is there every year, so that will be a great place for people to see us both parade up Liberty and stop in the park. And then lunch on Saturday is going to be in Gardner, and we should hit Gardner around 11:30, probably be in Gardner for about an hour and a half.
And that's right around the noon hour on Saturday, you say?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we'll get into Gardner probably around 11:30, eat lunch around noon, and we're planning to pull out of Gardner right around 1 o'clock.
The Burnham Farm is sort of the rallying point. That's where we'll start, that's where we'll end, and I guess we wind up there each day then, correct?
We start there each day, and we finish up there each day. So That's also a place where people would be able to get a look at the tractors. Probably not as much room to move around up there as there is at the park in Morris or in Gardner. And, of course, we're doing lunch in Marseilles at the Lions Club there on Sunday. And we'll also be doing our awards there. I know Max has been the recipient of a few awards and has given a few out. We'll probably be parked at the Marseilles Lions Club for around 2 hours.
That's been a favorite stop through the years. When we've gone there, the Lions have welcomed us in, and it's just been a great place to visit with folks from around the area. A lot of WGN listeners love to see the old tractors, and this will be a great opportunity. Those early years of the ride, it was crazy. I mean, just crazy. We would cover so many miles, and, I mean, over the course of the ride, we'd probably go 120, 140 miles. And with a lot of tractors, this is it may seem strange to say it, but it's a little more intimate having only 90 or so. And it should be a good number with a lot of variety. We tend to have a lot of red ones and green ones, but I bet there'll be some other colors too. Don't you figure, Don?
Oh, I'm sure we'll see some orange, and we always get some of that prairie gold from the Minneapolis Moline's, and that little bit lighter shade of green for the Oliver folks. We can't leave them out.
So if everybody wants to zero in on Morris, they can come join us. We'll start Friday, and the ride will continue Saturday and then on through Sunday morning. And if they really want to be in a public place where we'll have the tractors on parade, they can see us in Morris and count on that probably late Friday afternoon, about 2 to 4 in the afternoon, if I understand correctly.
That's right, Max. And one other place that we're stopping, but only for a few minutes, we're going to stop at Megan Bug's house. She's a young lady in Coal City who has cancer. And they're right down the street from the Coal City High School, which has a lot of parking. So if people wanted to catch us going by the high school on Carbon Hill Road on Saturday morning, probably about 20 minutes after 10, we'll be going by there. There's a lot of place there for people to be able to park and watch us go by as we get ready to stop at Megan's house.
Don Phillips, thank you for joining us to share the story with us, and we look forward to seeing you and a lot of other people out there in Grundy County around, as Uncle Bobby used to say, Morris, darling.
Morris. Thanks, Max.
Thank you. Take care. So we hope a lot of WGN listeners will come out and join us. I'll be on that Farmall Super M, the 1953 Farmall made by International Harvester in Rock Island. And Orion, we look forward to showing off the tractors and getting reacquainted with a lot of great folks who listen to WGN Radio.
Thank you very much, Max. I know you'll enjoy the ride. And if people want to see some older tractors ahead of that weekend, well, this weekend, head for Harvard, Illinois, the longest ongoing hometown festival in the state of Illinois. Harvard Milk Days, a salute to the dairy industry, is underway, and it goes through tomorrow with the parade, a two-hour parade. But there are games, food, fireworks, petting zoo, junior cattle show, races, contests, antique tractor shows, and a whole lot more. And I'm sorry that I'll miss the event today, but just didn't work out that I could get back there in time to do it. But this weekend, Harvard, Illinois, nice drive into the country, about 65 miles northwest of Chicago. It's kind of a homecoming time also for people who have grown up in Harvard and have moved away to pursue careers. But many of them come back to Harvard to celebrate Harvard Milk Days. So best of luck to you weather-wise in Harvard, and have a great time there. And Max will be joining us in just a few minutes to talk markets with Greg Groh, Roger, so that works out just fine. Your assignment is to keep the showers away from Harvard, Illinois, particularly at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, because that's when the Milk Day Parade takes place. And for years, more than that, decades, they paint Air Street, which is the main street in downtown Harvard, white. So they call it the Milky Way. So the Milky Way parade at Harvard Milk Days is Sunday at 1, and let's hope that we have good weather for that.
We'll work on keeping the rain away, because I know you'll be there in spirit.
I certainly will be there in spirit. Have a lot of friends up there and a lot of great memories of going to Harvard Milk Days, and I'll be back next year. Everything will work out just fine. Right now, here on the Saturday Morning Show, it's time for Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and today we'll talk a little bit about the gluten-free craze that has hit the United States. Before that, though, if you're looking for an easy way to keep your toilet bowls rust-free, I have the answer. RustGuard is the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that reacts and gets rid of rust and hard water stains with every flush. Just put one RustGuard tablet in the tank. It's that easy. RustGuard is safe for plumbing and septic systems, and it will not harm pets. So think Wink for those rust stains, then log on to wink.com. That's WHINK.com, and see all of the fine cleaning products from Wink. In case you don't know by now, I am truly bothered by the food labeling that we are required to follow here in the United States. I think that much of the food labeling that takes place is more an advertising ploy than anything else having to do with health. And apparently somebody agrees with me on the gluten-free craze that we have seen. Everything today is gluten-free. And it doesn't have to be, because there is one disease that does require no gluten in the diet, and that is celiac disease. But if you don't have celiac disease, according to my doctor friends, you don't need gluten-free, and as a matter of fact, you could be missing out on some vital vitamins and elements for good life. The anti-gluten craze that erupted in the last decade has become so prominent that it has spawned a $16 billion a year industry. But now there's somebody else who shares my concern over this running celiac disease gluten-free. Dr. John Duillard, a leader in the natural health field and author of Eat Wheat, said, "Wheat was found guilty without a fair trial, and there are risks when we just blindly take a food that people have eaten for 3.5 million years and remove it from our diets." So he's leading the charge in the opposite direction, though even he acknowledges that avoiding gluten is the right move for certain people. During May of this year, Celiac Awareness Month took place, bringing attention to the genetic autoimmune disease that damages the small intestine. And the doctor says people with celiac disease should avoid gluten, but there's no doubt about that. But for the majority of people, this anti-gluten frenzy has gone too far and needs to dial it back. Couldn't agree more. I think it's used more as an advertising ploy by food companies than any medical reasons. If you have celiac disease, you pretty much know it, and you avoid the gluten products. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. We're coming up to 20 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. As always, nice to have you along. Throughout the day on WGN Radio, Chicago, a place that's been home for me since 1960, and every day has been enjoyable, believe me. Well, we have Max standing by again to talk markets with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services, and he'll do that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Lou Piniella throws cold water on Cubs panic.
They've got good talent over there. Yeah. You know, they've got a little bit of a hangover this year from winning last year.
Sure.
But look, it reminds me a little bit of when I played with the Yankees in 77. We won a world championship. The next year, we got off to a sluggish start. At the All-Star break, we were 14 games out and came back and repeated as world champions.
The Chicago Cubs conversation is on. The station with the Cubs in our DNA. 720 WGN.
Bryce's lifeless body slumped over the piano keyboard. His forehead played a dissonant chord that reverberated throughout the hall. Not his best performance, I thought. I opened the back of his neck with my screwdriver. A couple of fresh bars of lithium brought him and the music back to life. I am sure that someday, he will do the same for me.
If this 20-second performance made you feel something, imagine what an entire Audible book can do. Visit audible.com to start your free 30-day trial.
The folks at Freshwave have a very important question to ask. Do you know what's in your air freshener? Grab a bottle of that clean linen tropical citrus surprise air enhancer. You know, the one with the aerosol can that screams harmful to the environment. And take a look at the ingredients on the side of the bottle. Got any idea what all those nasty chemicals even do? Or better yet, can you even pronounce any of them? It's a totally different ballgame with Freshwave, because they care about our air. Freshwave natural odor-removing products are using plant extracts and water to remove odors safely, naturally, and effectively. That's all. No harsh chemicals. No phony fragrances. No kidding. If you've ever been curious about the ingredients in air care products, head to FreshwaveWorks.com today. Learn more about Freshwave natural odor-removing products, read what other people are saying about them, and find your nearest Freshwave retailer using the store locator. You'll be glad you did. Find Freshwave at Bed Bath & Beyond, Ace Hardware, Walgreens, and Target locations.
Greg Groh in the booth with us this weekend from Archer Financial Services. I've heard that there are crop tours going on already, something that's usually saved for the month of August. I know at least one firm that was getting their act together to fan out over Indiana and Illinois, the epicenter of the May rains, to see what has happened. That is a knowledge void right now, isn't it, Greg?
Well, I think it's a concern. We know by looking at our temperature and moisture maps that that area you just mentioned was severely impacted in May for, you know, both the abnormal or excessive rains, but also colder than normal temperatures. When you look at northwest Indiana during that period of the first 2 or 3 weeks of May, we were running 10 to 15 degrees below normal. So the implications of that are being looked at, and I think you're right. People are out looking, scouting. Emergence has been slow in a lot of these areas, and no doubt plant populations have been impacted. I think the weather over Memorial Day was better maybe than expected, a little less rain, and guys have been really running this week. But people are behind with chemical and getting things wrapped up. So, but this last couple of days of weather, I think, has helped things a little bit. A little heat will certainly help conditions a little bit.
The amount of replant has been huge. I've heard from several individual growers, and that's such a gut-wrenching decision. I was talking with one producer about it this week, and he said it just hurts. It's ugly to try to make that decision of where you go in, you know, tear it up, try to put something else in there. And, of course, the development of that field is going to be so irregular within that field, its maturity and its availability to harvest in the fall.
Coming on to, like you just mentioned, very uneven situation will develop. A lot of the replant activity you're talking about is corn that might have been seeded in mid-April or the second to third week of April, and here we are at the 1st of June now with replant activity. I think it's bigger the further south you go in Indiana and into Illinois. The northern halves of those states were mostly impacted by the cooler temperatures, but a lot of ponding, a lot of overflow, say from Lafayette south down towards the Ohio River. No doubt massive replant activity is underway there this week.
There were reports of, I think, in total 16 inches of rain or something like that. I heard that number from a couple of producers about 100 miles apart of how much rain they received in the month of May. And I've used this example in other conversations. I was flying from North Carolina into Midway Airport in Chicago, and coming over southern Indiana right at sunset one evening, the sun hit the landscape perfectly, and to see all of those ponds and lakes, it was sobering.
Yeah, it's really something, and I think, as you mentioned, people are out surveying, driving these areas right now to try to get a handle on how big of an area has been impacted. No doubt crops are off to a very good start in the western areas. Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska seeded very timely. They had better weather, warmth, better emergence. But Illinois is kind of the break point, and as you go from Illinois on to the east, things are, as you mentioned, very uneven, and there's some concern, and in the market finally kind of queued up to it. This week's crop condition report showing good to excellent rating for corn, 5-6% below last year, calls into question the ability to make a trend line or above yields this year.
I noted, though, with interest, the report from economists at the University of Illinois suggesting that these early condition ratings reports mean very little in terms of the final yield on the United States corn crop.
And history shows us that the correlation to crop conditions right now to final yield is very weak. But we know that we're going to have an unevenness, and we're going to need some heat and better weather here in June. And maps look like we're going to get a little bit of that heat and a little better weather. But I noticed that starting this weekend, there's another maybe an inch of rain across that area coming. I think the area will handle it a little better as long as we have some heat right now.
I looked at the drought monitor map, the most recent one out this week, and boy, you notice California's improved dramatically. It looks like Georgia's improving some. They were in bad shape. Florida still has some very intense drought areas. One thing that caught my attention, Greg, was the expansion in 1 week's time of the dry area over the Dakotas.
Again, that's kind of a talking point this week as spring wheat planting kind of gets finished up in there. They're going to need a good shot of rain, and that kind of entered into the psychology a little bit this week as you just mentioned, that map showing some dryness up there. It helped them get seeded after what had been kind of a slow, sluggish start to things, but now they're going to need a little moisture to continue things.
Barring some significant development here, and I guess we need to ponder a little bit what that could be, but barring some development, are we likely to be in a sideways trading pattern through most of this month of June?
It feels that way. The beans broke down and made new yearly lows due to the large acres and the South American crop supplies. Corn, though, remains in a bit of a trading range. We kind of bang back and forth and from the high to the low of that range back and forth here the last couple of weeks. And I think that range is going to continue. It's going to be hard for the market to break out with the global supply situation the way it is right now unless we start talking, yield something 4% or 5% below trend. Then we might see a little better action in the market here. But those kind of decisions or thinkings along those lines are down the road a little bit. We got to get through June and kind of see where weather goes.
Global supply is big, as you note. Everybody I talk to on a regular basis also points out that global demand is quite large and doesn't seem to be softening.
Well, that is true. And when you look at the corn situation on a global basis with a lower U.S. production this year, maybe lower China production, ending stocks or global stocks are going to actually be set for a decline over this marketing year. And so it's the one part of the picture down the road that looks pretty good is that we're consuming a lot of this global corn crop right now.
Looking ahead to various things that you're going to be watching in the weeks ahead, I guess crop condition ratings will take on certainly a greater importance as we advance through the season. When do we get to really, really paying intense attention, if you will, to the weather forecast and the way the crop is looking in the field? Beginning of July?
I think so. I think historically that's kind of the key moment as we look at second half of summer weather forecasts and so forth and what we're going to anticipate. Certainly, July is kind of a key moment for corn. August, of course, a little bit more important for soy. But I think the weather is going to be a big factor. We got to get through the acreage report at the end of the month and quarterly stocks. I do think we're probably going to see a little lower corn acres, reflective of some of the things we talked about a few minutes ago. And the percentage of harvested acres to planted acres will probably be below the last couple of years' ratio. So we're tightening up a little bit on the acreage side of corn, and we'll just now have to watch the weather and see where we go with pollination and how we develop the crop.
Acreage, that story is still moving here. It's in flux, as we were talking a little bit earlier, here in these early days of June, when that June acreage report survey is being taken. That's not going to be a definitive number, is it?
No, it won't. That's why I think the survey work that you mentioned a little bit ago is going to be very important. People getting out and trying to get a handle outside of the USDA numbers as to the true nature of how much replant activity and how much prevent plant insurance claims we might have in some of these areas that just aren't going to get back in. Enough in order to get beyond that. So,
what are the price possibilities here? If we start to see that this corn crop maybe is below trend line yield and below certainly a year ago when we had a record, what kind of price activity could we see? What do you think is the strongest price point that we could hit?
Well, I think the market is psychologically going to be held back by the $4 price right now. We're actually struggling to move the market beyond 395 here in the last couple of days of trading, with the lower crop conditions helping the market build back towards that price. $4 will be a psychological spot. Remember last spring, early summer, when we rallied, we reached up to around 449 in new crop corn about a year ago or just before that. Certainly 450 will be a big resistance area given the global supply. It would take a pretty sharp drop in yield expectations for me to think we could move anything beyond that. And quite frankly, anytime we get a chance to market into that 4, 4.25 area this summer, I think that's going to be a very attractive price level.
Obviously, the markets have various factors that affect them, different factors between corn and beans. But if there is a corn market rally, if, I know that's a big if there is one this summer, would it help lift soybeans as well?
It would to some degree on given days, but the global supply of soybeans is not going to shrink the way that we're looking at corn over the next year. And it's going to be hard. China's crush margins have weakened dramatically. We've already heard talk that China might be actually canceling or attempting to roll forward some South American bean cargoes. So the soybean situation is set up in a very bearish way. And if those acres are there that we've heard about and we have any kind of a normal yield there, it's going to be very hard for the soybean market to create much of a major rally unless we see a real dry August. You know, that's down the road.
What else is out there other than weather, other than crop conditions, as we look at the international geopolitical scene, as we look at something that could rear its head out there? Is there anything else that you're keeping an eye on for the potential of moving markets this summer?
Well, I think it's trade right now, and there's a lot of nervousness in trade right now. We see Mexico opening inroads to try and build suppliers out of South America. Traditionally, they've been our biggest buyer of corn, and the trade rhetoric and political rhetoric of the last few months has caused them to look outside of the U.S. And these types of issues, as they move back and forth in the market, the politics of trade, whether it be in livestock or whether it be in the grain markets, are probably something we need to be very attuned to in the months ahead.
Greg, thanks for coming in. It's always good to see you and great to talk to you and to benefit from your knowledge.
Thanks, Max.
Greg Grobe with Archer Financial Services.
It's 5 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on the Saturday morning show. And just to review quickly the information on tomorrow's activity at the Illinois State Fairgrounds that we discussed with John Slayton early in the program today. Tomorrow, the Illinois Fairgrounds Foundation is launching a funding drive with a family event at the Illinois State Fairgrounds from 2 to 4 p.m. at The Shed, which is located near the fairgrounds gate 3. There will be food, entertainment, activities for children, and tours of the historic structures. Cost is $50 per person or $100 per family. And if you want more information on that, here is the website, illfairfoundation.com. That's illfairfoundation.com. And that will give you all the information for the fundraiser to rehabilitate some of the aging buildings at the Illinois State Fair. And of course, again, we remind you that if you're looking for a drive in the country this weekend, Harvard, Illinois, a good place to go, because they're celebrating what started out as a salute to the dairy industry in McHenry County and has just continued as a salute to the dairy industry, although many of the dairy farms have certainly moved out of the county. But that will be through tomorrow, and the parade down the Milky Way gets underway at 1 o'clock tomorrow at Harvard, Illinois. Then looking ahead to next week, World Pork Expo, June 7, 8, and 9. That's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That will be at the Iowa State Fairgrounds in Des Moines, presented by the National Pork Producers Council. It's the world's largest pork-specific trade show. There'll be educational seminars, youth and open swine shows, market outlook sessions. There'll be music. And of course, there will be an abundance of grilled pork and more. They have the big grill at that event, and they've had it every year, I think, since they started. And you can enjoy a grilled pork sandwich at lunch when you're going to World Pork Expo. So as I said, it comes up on Wednesday, opening day, and continues through the 9th. A couple of other upcoming events as well. Golfers are invited to join the largest golf outing that benefits agriculture in the state of Illinois. It's the 21st annual Illinois Agriculture in the Classroom Golf Outing. It's hosted by the IAA Foundation, and it's scheduled for next week, Thursday, June 8. And that will take place at the Elks Country Club and Wolf Creek Golf Club in Pontiac, Illinois. Driving ranges open at 9 a.m. with a shotgun start at 10 a.m. at the Elks and 10:30 a.m. at Wolf Creek. So make note of that. You can spend a day on the golf course and help a very beneficial program to helping people understand agriculture. That's the Agriculture in the Classroom Golf Outing coming up on the 8th of June. So we're into that season when there's plenty to do in the country, and county fairs will be getting underway at the end of this month. And of course, it's June Dairy Month, so we have the June Dairy Month Breakfast on the Farm, most of those taking place in Wisconsin. And if you're going to be traveling north to America's Dairyland, you can check the website of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture or the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board and see the full schedule of dates and locations, the farms that are hosting a lot of people for the June Dairy Month Breakfast on the Farm. Always a good time. And for young children, an opportunity to see how ice cream and cheese and butter gets its start on a dairy farm. So a lot to do, and we hope you'll enjoy one of these events that we've been talking about here on the Saturday Morning Show. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, who spins the dials for us, and thanks to Max, and thanks to you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Oh, and if you're an Amazon Echo user, just say, play WGN Radio.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.